Red Sox Nation turns to first. This is Boston's most listened to nightly baseball show, The Baseball Reporter with Tony Mann.
Brought to you by Rockland Federal Credit Union, New England Fat Loss, and Jordan's Furniture.
On Boston's home for sports, 98.5, The Sports Hub.
To get the runner to third, now you gotta get
by, deep into left center field, off the bat of Ramos, and that baby is
very rarely do you see good pitchers go that far. I haven't checked them. Probably won't, so I can sleep tonight. Just, you know, it stinks. I mean, you don't want to do that. I mean, like I said, it just kind of sucked the energy out of us. And that's on me. You know, I got to be better right there, especially later on in the game. Sixth, seventh, eighth inning, that's when you got to bear down. You know, runner in scoring position right there, got to be better.
So I'll admit, this is the part of Chris Sale that I like, the candor. I love the candor about Chris Sale, the willingness, the accountability, the willingness to step up and take responsibility for a mistake that he made that helped cost the Red Sox a game. It wasn't the sole reason the Red Sox lost last night, 4-1 to the Tampa Bay Rays in the opener of a four-game weekend series. That was not the only reason, but it was a significant one. It was a significant one, especially when the ninth inning started to play out the way it did a little and the Red Sox got a man on, had Lynn hit the ball through the infield there. You get the tying run to the plate of Mookie Betts. And the closer on the Tampa side, to me, feels a little beatable. But nonetheless, they lose 4-1, two in a row now. They've lost three more games coming up here over the weekend before the All-Star break. And don't kid yourself, they're important games. Close out strong. Close out strong. The division is now in your hands. I know there's a long way to go, but I don't want to see the Red Sox give up first place in the American League East. Let's open up the phone lines right away here on a... Agenda-free Friday. That's the afternoon program. But we can treat it the same way here on the Baseball Reporters. If you're in the car on the way down to the Cape, you're on the way up to Maine, wherever you're going, you're listening to the show, by all means, 617-779-0985. We want to take your thoughts, opinions on all things Red Sox. They had won six in a row here before earlier, earlier in the week. They lost the finale in Texas where they got their faces kicked in. That one I sort of felt was coming. Last night I thought they were going to win. They did not. And so I found last night's defeat frustrating. I found it frustrating. Chris Sale on the mound after a loss. The ace has got to shut down the opposition there. And Sale was doing a great job of it in the early part of that game. Fabulous job of it in the early part of that game. And then as it went along, obviously, the Rays got the lead, and then the two-run homer to Ramos that completely blew the game open. Did you know, the comment that Sale made about the home run, you don't often see a good pitch hit that far. Jimmy, you know what? If we could play the beginning of the cut again, right? Tell me, Murray, if you found this part of the comment at all interesting. Okay, again, listen to the specific words. Sale talking about the home run he gave up to Ramos.
Very rarely do you see good pitches go that far.
Stop.
I haven't checked.
You can stop it there. Very rarely do you see good pitches go that far. What do you think he meant? What does that mean? Do you think it was a good pitch? Because I went back and looked at it. When I heard the comment, I went back and looked at it. I mean, it was a fastball. It was down, but it was in the middle of the plate. I mean, and it wasn't so far down that it was like at the shoe tops. I mean, it was right around the knees. But it was in the middle of the plate. It wasn't like when I heard him say, very rarely do you see a good pitch hit that far, I started to wonder.
Do you take it as a shot at Ramos, like he's some kind of bum?
You know, the way I read it, Murray, I wondered if it was a wink, wink, or did these guys know what was coming? That's what I wondered. Like, you know, Ramos had a good night last night. And part of me wondered, was Sale implying that Ramos knew what was coming? Like that, you know, that they're stealing a sign or something. And I don't know. I may be reading into it way too much.
Wasn't there an incident over the weekend with the Rays and stealing signs?
I don't know. Check it out, Jimmy. Check it out. Maybe. There was a team that got into a, you know,
somebody was, a pitcher was barking at a second base, runner on second base.
You know what? Now that you mention it, I think you might be right. Check that out. There was something. Now that you mention it, I remember seeing it on the MLB Network. I wasn't sure it was the Tampa game. But now that you mention it, maybe so. I just wondered. It was a bizarre comment. Very rarely do you see a good pitch hit that far. And so I wondered, maybe Sale thinks they stole a sign and Ramos knew a fastball was coming.
Or he thinks the ball's juiced.
Okay, now the ball's juiced. If there's any doubt, the ball is juiced.
Seems like a high percentage of home runs he's saving up lately.
Home runs are all over the place.
Yeah. It was the Dodgers and the Padres, by the way.
Dodgers and the Padres. Okay, so it wasn't the Rays. I was going to say, I knew there was a game. It wasn't the Rays game. But in any case, the ball's juiced, which, by the way, I commend Major League Baseball for. Like, everyone says, how do you fix the game if you take steroids out of it? Easy. You start playing with a Titleist one. That's all. You turn it into a golf ball. The runs will come back. No problem there.
And who's the other ass clown that hit one off him last night? Peter Bourgeois?
Yes. Peter Bourgeois. Yep, absolutely.
Guys like that hitting home runs.
And look, you got guys that, you know, the Mike Moustakas of the world are in the home run derby. Okay? So there's something, there's definitely something going on with the baseball. I have no doubts about that. But anyway, on sale. To me, the disappointing part of it is that the ace didn't truly come through. You needed to keep that game at 2-1. You weren't going to score a lot last night. I put a little of that on sale. That said, he's the starter in the All-Star game. He should be the starter in the All-Star game. I don't think there's any question. And the first half he has had, monster. Monster first half. I want to get to the third base situation, too, because I did a little more research on it, and I feel more strongly than ever about what the Red Sox need to do at third base to solve their problems. And then we'll get to Drew Pomeranz as well, because he's on the mound tonight. They've lost two in a row. Pomeranz, Murray, what was the stat you gave me earlier that Pomeranz has had the best ERA in baseball or in the American League since when?
Let me get this. It's from Boston Sports Inf.
So like the middle of May or something, right? For the last 6 weeks,
yep.
7 weeks?
American League starting pitchers earn run leaders since May 14th. Minimum of 10 games started. Drew Pomeranz is the best ERA since May 14th with a 2.72.
In the American League?
In the American League.
So do you have confidence in him out there tonight?
What are they, like 10-6, I think, in his last 17 starts or whatever it is, 16 starts? I do.
Okay, I don't. But, well, you know, let's see how that goes. Okay, an important start for Pomeranz. And again, they've lost a couple in a row. They're going into the weekend. They're going into the break, rather. His last start before the All-Star break. You know, they can still split at worst the series, maybe win 3 out of 4. You can't drop the first two.
My concern more right now, real quick, is, you know, Bogaerts, who's been swinging a pretty decent bat. Now he's hurt. He's out of the lineup. I would have liked to have seen things switched up a little bit because Mookie Betts has gone ice cold, and I think he's like 0 for his last 15, and he doesn't really look all that great leading off. So I would have liked to have seen, you know, seen things shaken up a little bit, but it's basically the same lineup save for Marrero at third, and you got two-way Lynn at shortstop in for Bogaerts.
Okay, so Bogaerts is out tonight.
Yeah.
Okay, so that's something to keep an eye on, too. That's, you know, when they haven't scored the last couple of games, and you don't want to be losing bats at this stage now either. It's a good point, Murray. 617-779-0985. Let's kick it off with Ben, who is in Milton. Go ahead.
Yes, I was just curious. I mean, I don't really know the specifics about it, but does this have a feel this season? I mean, Sale's season so far has been pretty sick. How often that he just seems to get that, like, one-run, two-run support? And even if he has, you know, pretty strong game and doesn't have a perfect one, it just seems to always come back to, oh, well, he lost 4-2. He lost 3-1.
Well, so look, last night, there's no question. He didn't get much help in the way of support. I there's no doubt about that, Ben. But remember, the reason that you have this guy is because he's supposed to win when he doesn't get support. So I don't know. I'm a little tougher on the run support thing than a lot of people are. But it's one of those things where you say, well, you know, you're the best guy going. You're supposed to be the best in the league. You should take a little less. And as I look it up right now, among qualifying starters in the American League, Murray, where would you guess that Chris Sale ranks in run support among qualifying starters in the American League?
Oh, he's got to be at the bottom, probably dead last.
Okay, among 34 starters, he ranks second. Second. He's had the second-best run support in the league.
Really?
Number two. Rick Porcello is 27th. Now, to me, Porcello has got a bitch. He's got a legitimate gripe. Some ridiculous stat, like in half of his starts, they haven't scored while he's been in the game. Something like that with Porcello?
Yeah, and he also leads the American League in losses.
Exactly. So they go hand in hand. And I'm not saying Porcello has pitched well. But Sale, I think, in the run support area has done okay. Adam is in Hanover.
Hey, how we doing, guys?
Good.
I'm a bit of a homer, but does anyone realize that we may have the greatest outfield, not only in Red Sox history, but in baseball history? Benintendi, Brett Betts, and Bradley. The upside, the poise. You know, Marloni on another radio station, not going to say which, was saying, you know, our outfield lacks character. These guys act like they're veterans and they're in their early 20s. Think back to the 2013 World Series that we won. You know, our outfield was Victorino, Gomes, maybe JBJ in center, I don't even remember, but we have such an outstanding outfield, and I think we need to recognize that this may be a historic combination.
Okay, so look, Adam, these are nice little cute little baseball discussions, and I'm not telling you that I think this outfield is bad. It's good, it's young, it's talented. But best in baseball history? And honestly, at the end of the day, who cares? What do you get for that? Like, I understand we divide it up. I get it. The outfield's good. Yes, it is. Terrific. Does that win you a World Series? Do you get a trophy for that or something? Like, what does that mean? You want to talk about individuals that get you into the Hall of Fame. The best outfield of all time? Does that get you anything? To me, with this group in particular, and I'll tell you, we'll play a comment for you that Chris Sale made last night after the game. Felger was, more dialed in on it than I was in terms of what it reflects about the makeup of the Red Sox and whether or not they're soft. But I'll tell you what I wonder about this team. I wonder that whether they, if we're going to get onto the topic of the young outfielders, do these guys really know how to win? Do they know how to win? Do the Red Sox really, truly know how to win? This current constitution of the Red Sox. Dustin Pedroia does. He's got rings. He's got two of them. David Ortiz had three. Chris Sale doesn't. Let me rephrase. David Price for sure does not know how to win in the postseason. We can say that with certainty. Does Kimbrel know how to close in October? I don't know. Do you? Does Chris Sale, can he win in October? Because he's never pitched there. Rick Porcello, he got his brains beat in last October too. So if you want to start having a discussion about the greatness of the outfield, let's wait to see if they win anything first. We'll play that comment for Sale for you when we come back. I want to get into the third base situation because to me there's a very clear, simple truth about the Red Sox and third base now that honestly I feel now is indisputable.
Baseball Reporters with Tony Mass, 98.5 The Sports Hub, Radio.com. Radio.com. The show the Red Sox Nation turns to first. The Baseball Reporters, 98.5 The Sports Hub.
We've been playing well. I think there's been a lot of questions along the way, and I think we've answered them pretty well. We got guys that have been here a while that have been doing what we needed to do, and some young guys stepping up. So this is a fun team. We're good. We have a lot of talent, and I think with a lot of outside noise going on, we've handled it very well, and we've played very well. So we're going to clean these next three games up, and we'll play good and play hard, and in the first half on a good note.
So Chris Sale, this comment. Felger touched on it on the midday show, on the afternoon show, rather. And
you got another demotion?
No. So I think there's some truth to it. This idea that the Red Sox have had to deal with a lot of outside noise. I don't think there's been a ton of outside noise. There's been some. But it does sort of reaffirm the fact. And look, I'm happy he's here. I like him. I think he's a hell of a competitor. Chris Sale. I liked it from the very beginning. Okay? But he's never pitched in the postseason. So Chris Sale has never been on the mound in the biggest moment. I have confidence that he will pitch well there because I think the guy's an animal. But when you really look at this Red Sox roster, let's not forget that other than Sale, the same team is basically back that they had a year ago. Okay, and David Ortiz is obviously gone. But essentially, otherwise, you got the same guys. And in the playoffs, boy, did they look tight. They tightened up. Mookie Betts looked tight. Bogarts, Betts, they look tight.
Not Benintendi.
They tightened up in the playoffs.
Maybe the only guy that could hit.
Okay, so they did nothing against the Indians. They got swept, and that was it. And it was all sort of passed off to us as, at least from the Red Sox, a learning experience. Okay, fine. No problem. I'm good with that. The 2003 Red Sox had a massive meltdown, even if they had some, and it wasn't necessarily the players' fault. They made a change. A year later, they won the World Series. It can happen. And and that's not a perfect analogy because, again, the manager got in the way in that case. But the players do have to have a certain mentality and makeup. Whether this team has it, I don't know. I know David Ortiz had it. I know Dustin Pedroia does because I've seen them win and I've seen them perform under pressure. I have the utmost faith in those guys. These guys, I don't know yet. And Sale included. And I'm not telling you he will fail. I worry about the durability factor with Sale in the second half of the year. But in terms of knowing how to win and winning a championship and being able to focus on the things that demand your attention and ignoring the stuff that does not, let's see as it goes forward. Because the closer you get to a championship, the harder it gets. And I don't think the Red Sox have had that tough a road here in terms of media scrutiny in the early part of the year. Hell, compare the media now to what it was like when they had gone almost a century without winning. You think the level of panic or scrutiny is anywhere even remotely close to what it was then? Because it isn't. Not even in the same area code. And in the case of Sale, let's not forget he played for the White Sox. So Chicago, to me, wildly overrated media town. It's not a tough media town at all. Secondly, he played for the White Sox, who are barely on the map in Chicago. The White Sox could lose 15 in a row, and nobody would care. The Cubs, the Bears, the Bulls and the Blackhawks, those teams get attention. The White Sox don't. That stadium and that fan base, one of the most depressed baseball markets I've seen ever. Ever. It's dreadful to watch a game in that place. Dreadful on so many different levels. Let's get back to your calls. John's in a car. John, what do you got?
Hi, Tony. So you had mentioned you were on the talk about third base, and that's what I wanted to ask you about. What do you think they're going to do? What should they do for this season?
Okay, so John, here's the comment I want to read to you that John Farrell again said earlier in the week, and I took it out of the Globe. I presume he said it to the entire media contingent there. And I found the comment fascinating, okay? Farrell says, talking about the, and he was asked about the contributions of Zhu Weilin. And Farrell said, I can tell you the energy in the dugout and some of the comments, whether it's Linny or Linsanity, whatever it might be, there's a side thing that's going on here that we can't turn away from. We recognize it. I mean, he says Linsanity. It's obvious this is what some of the other guys on the team are calling him. Okay, nobody ever heard of this kid. He comes up from Double A, puts some balls in play, plays pretty good defense. He runs well. He hustles, all of that. He's hit a couple of triples. And now all of a sudden everybody's like, hey, check this out. This kid's not going to play this way the whole time. But when I read this comment isn't about Zhu Weilin. This comment is about Pablo Sandoval. You just don't know it. So when you read it again, there's a side thing that's going on here that we can't turn away from. There's energy with this kid. Other guys on the team like him. He's a functional baseball player. He can put the bat on the ball. He can turn a double play. He can play third base. He can run and get a triple. He can bunt for a hit. He can do a lot of little things, even if he's not a star, and he's not going to hit 400 or even 300, which is basically what he's been hitting since he's been here. But what he can do is try, execute fundamental things, and care and play with energy, which the other guy, Sandoval, did not. And so when I read this comment about the positives and the energy and the vibe, for lack of a better word, the vibe that a kid like Lynn brings, and let's not leave out Marrero either, because I think Marrero's in the same breath. Marrero plays a similar way. He's not quite as slashy and dynamic as Lynn, who's smaller, but Marrero tries too. And he just can't play as much of the time because he can't hit right-handed pitching. But when you add that in, you know what it tells you? Pablo's dead weight. Pablo drags them down. Pablo's attitude sucks. Pablo swings at bad pitches. His defense blows. Like, what does he give you? You don't even know if he's in shape. He's going to get fatter. There's no question about that. All of it. So why bring him back? Why would you ever bring Pablo Sandoval back into this environment? Let me give you one more thing, and it's a very small sample. Zhu Weilin has started 8 games. The Red Sox are 6-2. Okay? And again, I'm not giving him the credit. He's no star. What he is, though, is a functional bottom-of-the-order major league player. That's all he is. A functional bottom-of-the-order major league player. He might hit 240 for all I know. Honestly, I don't care. They're 6-2 when he starts. Last night, do you realize in the 8 games he started, he has reached base in every game? He has walked 6 times in 8 games. Pablo Sandoval played almost 40 games and walked 8 times. 8. 8 walks in 40 games. This kid has 6 already in 8 games. And the Red Sox have had 2 6-game winning streaks this year. 2. That's 12 wins in a row. They are 12 games over 500. So what you could say is the whole difference in their season is the 2 6-game winning streaks. You know where Pablo Sandoval was for those? On the DL. Both times. He wasn't even in the clubhouse. He wasn't with the team. I think he's a negative. I think he drags them down. I think he weighs them down. I think when he's around, it becomes, when's Pablo going to play? What are you going to do with Pablo? Can Pablo field? Do you have to platoon him? Can he hit righties? Can he hit lefties? What are you going to do with Pablo? What about the contract? You're only halfway through. It was $95 million. The whole storyline and vibe with Pablo is negative. Negative, negative, negative. With this kid, it's, hey, what do you know? What a surprise. Came out of nowhere. You feel like you found money in your pocket. Totally different. With Sandoval, you're looking in your wallet like you woke up from the night before after you had 100 beers, and you're saying, where all my money go? With Jeremy Lin? Zhuwei Lin? You know what you say? I just found an extra $20 when I pulled my pants out of the laundry. How do you like that? I'm telling you, don't bring Pablo back. He's dead weight. Alex is in the car.
Hey, Maz, that's exactly what I wanted to talk about. I'm curious what you think when or if Brock Holt ends up by coming back. Who do you think the odd man out is for the, you know, third base platoon? Because I honestly think it's Marrero, because you know, I think the Tsunami looks good.
Okay, so Alex, look, here's what I would tell you, that I want Brock Holt to be part of that mix too. Holt is a similar kind of leaguer. And let's not delude ourselves. Marrero, Lynn, those guys are not full-time big league players. None of them are. But what you can do is piece it and maybe get something out of it. You're certainly going to get a hell of a lot more than you get out of Pablo, because at least the attitude is good and you get some athleticism. At least. With Pablo, really, what do you get? What positive is there with Pablo? And you know what? Even that, if he were a neutral, no problem. He's a negative. He's a negative in the clubhouse. He's a negative in the dugout. He's definitely a negative on the field. Randy in Kingston, what do you got?
Hey, Tony, good show. Hey, I wanted to go back for a second to your comment about Sale and his quote last night about the good pitch.
Yes.
I love a good controversy. I actually wish you were right on this one, because I think it'd make the series more exciting. But I think if you go back to the question asked, I think he was actually just being a little snippy to the reporter who asked him if he thought it was a good pitch that Ramos hit.
Okay. So, Randy, again, I didn't hear the question, and if that was the context, then maybe that's why I usually don't see a good pitch hit that far, as if to say to the reporter, no, you idiot, of course it wasn't a good pitch. It was a bad pitch. And, again, it, to me, it was right down the middle. So when I first heard the comment, I went back and looked at the highlight, as I said, I don't remember it being, like, I don't remember thinking on the home run, boy, how did he hit that? You know, there was a slider that he gave up the home run earlier in the game. The ball hung up there, and I thought, okay, well, there's a hanger. Because when Sale gets that slider right, that thing's burying in, down and in on a right-handed batter. I mean, you just can't hit it. But the ones that he leaves up that hang, you can crush those. The pitch that Ramos hit out was a fastball, and I thought, was it away? Was it at his shoe tops? Did he club it? Was it up by his eyes? Was it down and in? How did he get the head of the bat on it? It was right down the middle. It wasn't necessarily up. It was about knee-high, but it was right down the middle. So I wondered whether or not Sale was questioning whether the Rays are stealing signs or somehow relaying pitches or whatever. That's what I wondered. But I'll take your word for it, because, again, if the question was leading him into that, then so be it.
We have the Sox covered. The Baseball Reporters, 98.5, the Sports Hub. Radio.com. Radio.com. We have the Sox covered. This is the Baseball Reporters. Tony Maserata, show that Red Sox Nation turns to first. 98.5, the Sports Hub.
Three games left before the All-Star break. Three games. Pomeranz goes tonight. And then in the last two, everybody but Fister and Sale. So David Price goes in there. Rick Porcello goes in there. In fact, Pomeranz, Porcello, and who else did I say? Good God. Pomeranz, Porcello, and who am I missing?
Fister? Would he go
No,
Sunday?
He already went.
Oh,
no.
Right.
No, I just said it a second ago, too. And boy, my brain is absolute pudding right now. In any case, the Red Sox have good pitching going this weekend. You got to take two out of three from Tampa. Go in on an up note. Don't go in on a low note. CJ's in Dorchester. CJ, what do you got?
Hey, what's up, guys? I don't know how you feel about this. I know Porcello had a good start last time, but he's pitched absolutely atrociously this year, coming off of a freakishly good season last year. I'm wondering at what point you start thinking about trying to make a move for an actual decent starting pitcher. If this just not getting the job done, I don't even know what's out there. But, you know, I don't want to talk too badly about Rodriguez's rehab starter, David Price, to start yelling at me. But, I mean, I don't know.
Okay, so CJ, hold on 1 second. So Fister's out. Forget Fister. It's going to be Rodriguez in that spot when he comes back. Why do you need another one?
I'm sitting here thinking about, you know, this team has a good shot. If not, it's almost a lock that they're going to make the playoffs in some sort of way. And who are you starting three? It's not going to be Porcello. We know it's going to be Sale. It looks like it's going to be Pomerantz at this point. I have no idea about David Price, but who else goes in there? Blaine Boyer?
Okay, so look, in terms of who's going to pitch games 1, 2, and 3, let's just worry
Sale,
about that.
Sale, Price, Porcello.
Yeah, I was going to say, let's worry about that one when we get there. Like, if Porcello's still going bad, like, you know, you have Pomerantz to choose from, you have Rodriguez to choose from, and I'm not telling you I love the options. Okay, but let's worry about that one down the road. I'm more worried about getting their starting pitching through the regular season. I didn't think Price was going to hold up. Then Rodriguez got hurt. It got so desperate you had to pluck Doug Fister off of waivers. He actually gave you 2 half-decent outings before the last one, and then he completely gets smashed in the face. And that was the end of that.
But I would rather Dombrowski go get another guy off the trash heap like a Doug Fister rather than dipping back into the pool of young prospects and gutting this team further for some other guy that he made an assessment on and didn't really end up looking at the medicals like he did with Drew Pomerantz last year. Like, I'm good. No thanks. Play the hand you're dealt.
Thank you, Murray. I'm with you. I'm with you. No more big trades for pitching. You've done enough there. You've done enough. Now, look, they drafted a pitcher high in this draft. Obviously, they drafted Groom with the 7th overall pick last year.
Well, even just for this year, Brian Johnson just got sent back down
to
AAA.
Yes, so I forgot about Johnson. Johnson's just been taken off the DL and sent to AAA.
So he'll probably be back sooner than later. And hopefully Eduardo Rodriguez is going to be fine after this next rehab start on Sunday, and that'll be that.
So hopefully no more major mishaps. Okay, let's worry about the playoffs later. But I am not dealing for a starting pitcher. Bullpen. Carson Smith isn't even back up on the mound yet. You're still waiting on him? Meanwhile, who are you going to trust? Matt Barnes?
How many times in the last 2 months do you see any of these beat guys tweet, well, you know, the Red Sox are hoping Carson Smith is going to be back on the mound pretty soon. When?
Yeah.
When?
And when he comes back, Murray, forget it. You
right.
don't know what you're going to get.
Yeah,
he hasn't pitched in over a year. And so in his arm strength's not going to be back to where it's supposed to be until next year. Forget Carson Smith. Don't hold your breath on that one. Carson Smith's a no. They need bullpen help. And if Dombrowski has half a brain, he knows it. Dave's in a car. Dave, go.
2 quick things on third base. Number one, I heard another report about Martin Prado today. This is a guy in his mid-30s, a nice player, but like a career utility guy who just signed a 3-year, $40 million contract. The last thing this team needs is to give up any more prospects. Supposedly, they're walking a tightrope on the luxury tax right now. The last thing you need to do is clog it up again with a guy in his mid-30s for 3 years that, you know, best-case scenario is like a decent player.
So, Dave, you are so right. You couldn't be more right. And the one thing I would tell you is that if you read Nick Cafardo today in the Globe, he made reference to the fact that according to a source that the Red Sox interest in Prado was quote-unquote on the back burner, which means to me they're doing their due diligence, but they don't really have an interest in trading for that contract.
Okay, well, that's good to hear. But secondly, you're absolutely right. Don't let Sandoval anywhere near this team. It's over now. It's a big failure. It's done enough damage. Stop it now. Don't let it do more damage. Just bringing him around. You got a groove going. Guys are excited about winning. You're playing well. You took over first place. Just don't bring this guy around to just kill the mood and kill your rally, because that's the worst case. The best case is you just keep going like you are now. He's going to give you nothing. There's no reason to think he's going to give you nothing. A guy that big in his 30s, you know, he doesn't suddenly just start getting healthier and get better. It doesn't happen.
Yeah, and I'll tell you what. I just to me, it's got as much to do with his attitude as anything else. And if Jimmy or Murray, one of you two, just call up the Red Sox stats for a second, will you? Because I want to ask you specifically to give me the numbers on Lynn and give me the numbers on Marrero, okay? And because with the Sandoval thing, I really do believe this. It's addition by subtraction. The guy was a huge negative. Huge negative. What did he give you? He wasn't hitting. He can't move. I think his attitude sucks. He's going to put on weight again. Like, the whole thing has been a disaster. So why would you introduce that element again into a team that at least has functional players at the end of the lineup? And by functional, I'll explain in a second. But Marrero's just barely over 200, right?
Yeah, he's 214.
Okay, and what's his OPS?
OPS is 599.
Okay, so that is wretched offensively. It is. It's wretched. Yeah. Now, against left-handers, he's much better. And I'll get you the specific numbers against lefties here in a second.
Okay. And Lynn's hitting 310, OPS of 877.
Okay, so Lynn has been like a revelation. I mean, the idea that this kid could be invisible in their minor league system and then all of a sudden get called up during a year in which he's having kind of a breakout year at Double A, but he's older. You know, he's been in the system for a while.
He's like 26, I think.
Okay, so it's not like he came out of, you know, he was some sort of a prospect that was ripping up the low levels and then had a couple of he's never been good offensively. Ever. I mean, really, it's astonishing how bad, you know, or mediocre he's been in his minor league career. What you're getting out of him is coming out of nowhere. It really is coming out of nowhere. And Marrero, by the way, against left-handed pitching, is 361 with an OPS over 1,100. Perfect. Honestly, even those, he's not going to keep that up. Trust me, he's not a good enough hitter. And Lynn is not going to do what he's doing against right-handed pitchers, let alone overall. That's not going to happen either. But when you get to the bottom of the lineup, you know what those guys do? Try and actually give you something remotely resembling big league play and a big league at bat. Remember the three-run home run that Mookie Betts hit in Toronto over the weekend? There were two bunt hits before it. Pablo can't do that. The defense with these guys, for the most part, has been solid, stable, big league caliber, simple fundamental play. Nothing special. Pablo can't do that. You get to the bottom of the lineup, these guys can occasionally get you hit the other way, run the bases aggressively. Maybe if the opponent makes a mistake, you take an extra base and score. So Lynn can steal you some bases. Pablo can't do any of that. Zero. He gives you zip. Zip. I'll take 8 and 9 hitters over Pablo. And that's what these guys are. Part-timers. Part-time 8 and 9 hitters over Pablo. I will take either one of those guys. Let me rephrase. I'll take them as a tandem over Pablo. They're better. And the team plays better. They can do more things. They can actually play baseball and not just some stupid-ass softball game with a beanbag and a big contract. Give me the two kids, Benz and Milton.
Hi, Maz. So, listen, I'm going to try and defend Pablo Sandoval for a second, as much as I hate to do it. So here's the thing. You were, at the beginning of the show, you were crapping on all the Red Sox pitchers because none of them have done anything in October. You know, you said Sale hasn't done anything. We know Price hasn't done anything. But the one guy on the team that has done something in October and is actually really good in October is Pablo Sandoval. So I'm curious to know, like, what – I mean, you say there's nothing he can bring to the table, but clearly he's a guy who's proven he can play well when it matters.
Okay, so, Ben, this crossed my mind today, too, and I'm glad you brought it up because it's a good question. Right, that if there's a way you can stash Pablo and then bring him up late in the year and then play him in the playoffs, right? If that's because that's basically what you're thinking, right?
Sure.
Okay, how would you feel about putting him into a playoff game right now? What kind of confidence would you have in him?
I'd feel more confident with him than I would with Devin Marrero or the other guys, you.
Oh, God, please, you can't be serious.
People are too caught up in
this. What have they proven?
I'll tell you what they've proven is that they can at least contribute during the regular season, and I let them go.
And Sandoval's proven, with this stint here, he doesn't deserve a chance to
be
on this roster.
No, in order to get to the point, because listen, he asked a good question, though. He asked a good question. Sandoval in the playoffs has been good. Historically, he's been a good postseason performer.
Yeah, but you can't even count on getting a professional at-bat out of this guy. One of the last times I remember that you needed him in a big moment was that loss to wretched Philadelphia in that awesome Chris Sale start, and they put him up in the ninth inning, and he goes down in three pitches. At least with this Lynn kid, you could draw a walk. Do you have 7 walks?
6 walks in 8 games.
So you'll get a more professional at-bat out of this kid.
Pablo's got 8 walks all year.
Get the hell out of here.
Okay, and with Sandoval, the playoffs were 3 years ago. I mean, that was 3 years ago. Is he the same guy?
No.
Is he even close to the same guy? I know he's
people caught up in that or 2012 like that. It's so long ago now.
He's a career 344 hitter in the postseason, right? Which is great. World Series MVP, 426 in the World Series, all of which is great. That was 3 years ago. He's never done any of that here. And again, see, the big question for me, because this thought crossed my mind today when the caller brought it up. I said, I wonder if there's a way maybe you could stash Pablo down there. And then all of a sudden, late in the year, bring him up in September when rosters expand, play him, get his confidence up, and then play him in the playoffs. And then I thought, well, but for me to have confidence in him, he has to play well. Like, I don't just look at it and say, well, the resume says that I have to have confidence in you in October. The resume suggests a 350 batting average in October. If he's playing this way, the way he's played this year, and his whole time at Boston, if he's playing that way, the same way in September, are you going to put him in the playoffs?
No.
Because I'm not. He's got to show me first that there's something there. Like, I don't just do it because he did it 3 years ago in the playoffs. I know that everybody, we all do this. We think that somehow past performance is an indicator of future performance. And there's a point where that is no longer true. In some cases, it is. Like, if a guy's in his prime, if he's in shape, and it's worked out.
After the knee injury, I was willing to give him one more shot. Okay, you know, he ended up having a pretty decent game in that series against Chicago. But since that was really it. It's not going to. You're not going to get what you got in those postseasons in 2012 and 2014 out of this guy. That's a fallacy. Don't get wrapped up in that anymore, because that's what I was hoping for. Okay, maybe he can turn it around. You can have him in the playoff roster, but F that. This guy does not even deserve that shot.
Boston's most comprehensive